Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog. I hope you're tuning in to listen to enlightening, educational, and informative conversations about life with service dogs and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Thank you for tuning in to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. And welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai. I want to give you a couple of disclaimers this evening. I am not using real names of places or people. The reason being for the protection of my guest, who we will call DV Vet Chick. Vet Chick, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you have a very detailed and intricate past with your VA and your service dogs. And I use plural because we're going to talk about, we're going to set some groundwork leading up to the current challenge that we're dealing with, and which I'm grateful to you. You reached out to me to give you some assistance and some ammunition. So I want to go back to 2011. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. You were receiving dental treatment and dealing with the side effects of your mental health medication, which was causing dental issues. Tell me a little bit about, just in general, what you were working with at the dental clinic at your VA.
Well, one of the side effects of psychotropic medications is called dry mouth. And it's just what it says, dry mouth. You are constantly thirsty, and bacteria grows better in your mouth, and it endangers your teeth. And a lot of times they don't tell us when we start psychotropic things like that. Had I known, I would have taken even better care of my teeth over the years. But fast forward to 2011, and I started having repeated issues with my teeth, constant cavities, the occasional abscess, and bits of my teeth were breaking off. My dentist and I at the VA were fighting a holding action and maintaining my teeth to a point where they were usable and I was not actively sick. Comes the day that I my service dog with me for the first time. Up until that point, my roommate had been acting as my service human and would go to my appointments with me. Bill Rain was ready to go with me to my appointments. I took her to the first one without thinking. I'd been seeing this dentist for well over a year at this point. And we got in there. And you understand the treatment bays there are just that, they're bays. They don't have actual physical doors, and people can roam through from one treatment bay to another without actually getting into the intervening corridor. So it's not a sterile field of any kind. I go in my street clothes. They wear scrubs, but they don't gown up or scrub or anything like that.
Right, right. So it's not a physically sterile environment or an isolated environment.
Oh, heavens no. I put Rain in a downstay in the corner, get in the chair. What was a normal appointment became an emergency extraction because one of my teeth had fractured. And it was an upper one. I don't know if you understand doing work on upper teeth. They generally tip your feet up and your head down so they can work on the upper teeth. So I was basically standing on my head. If you think of the commercial for that thing called Teeter Hang-Ups, yeah, it's a lot like that.
Right, right.
So he's working on my teeth. He didn't say anything about Rain at all. She was in the corner. She wasn't doing anything. There was nothing to say. And then about partway through, I started getting back spasms from hanging upside down. So they flipped me up, and I started pounding out the spasm. Rain got up, walked, I don't know, 5 feet, 6 feet to me, put her head on my knee like she was supposed to check to make sure mom was okay. Because for me, going to the dentist is stressful anyway, and extraction is worse, and it's the VA. I was not having a good day.
But right, now let's make clear, this is your PTSD service dog. So yes, the dog, part of the dog's job is to check in with you on your mental health.
Yep. And she, part of what she did, not only to check on me, but to give me a little bit of tactile stimulation by putting her head on my knee, and I pet her ears and talk to her and everything, just to ground me a little bit more. And right, I told her, I said, I'm okay, Rainey. We're doing just fine. You can go back and lay down, which is exactly what she did. We continued the appointment. They pulled my tooth. I sniveled, said, I'll see you in 2 weeks, because I appointment with him every 2 weeks, no matter if I had a problem or not. Grabbed up Rainey's leash and off we went. 2 weeks later, I showed up for my appointment and sat down in the waiting room with Rain. Was looking at a magazine when a uniformed VA guard came in and was standing by the door. I didn't pay any attention. I had no reason to. Then my dentist's hygienist came in, assistant dental assistant came in and was talking to him. And then the receptionist was talking to them. And then the dental assistant called my name. So Rainey and I went over. And it was at that point that I realized that the security guard was there for me. Apparently, the VA that I go to assumes that if you have a mental health diagnosis, you must be kind of dangerous. That's when they told me that Rain couldn't go into my appointment with me. Went through all the normal things we go through when given an access challenge, asked them why, explained about the ADA, explained what Rain did, how she did it. I told them more than I needed to because I had nothing tied. They were adamant. And the security guard said, can you leave her in your car? I said, I came by taxi today. My car's broke down. Do you have someone you can leave her with? And I said, no. The purpose of having a service dog is so I can be independent and go about my life.
Right. Yeah.
They had me, since I wanted to go into my appointment at that point, they had me leave her with the receptionist. I looped her leash around a doorknob. The receptionist was not pleased, neither was Rain or I. But I gave her a stay. She sat down, and that's where she was. I go with the dental assistant into the treatment area. She puts me in the chair, puts the little bib on me, and she's going to go get this stuff to set up. All a normal thing. But by then, I'm starting to shake, and the panic was building. Mm-hmm. Along with the panic was the fury.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came back, I said, you know what? Don't bother. And she said, you mean don't bother? I said, don't bother. Fuck this. This is bullshit. And I got up and I left. Which, if anybody knows me, knows that's probably the best thing for me to do.
Right.
I went and got Rain and left the dental area and was going to the exterior door. As I opened it, the security guard starts chasing after me and says something. And my response to him was, fuck off. I got outside, got away from the building. I threw up. I went to the patient advocate. That was an exercise in futility. Not only was she dumb as a brick, but I gave her all of the websites to check. At that time, the people I was dealing with were a group called the Psychiatric Service Dog Society, who had done a lot of grassroots work on people using mental health service dogs.
Right, right.
PTSD, but for depression and paranoid schizophrenia and all kinds of things. And they're a really good group of about 3,500 people who shared information and support about service dogs, service dogs, under the guise of a listserv that was trying to raise awareness and acceptance for mental health service dogs. I gave her everything, the patient advocate, everything about that. I gave her the ADA website. I gave her the Psychiatric Service Dog Society website. I gave her the Rehab Act of 73 website link. I don't know where she went. She didn't tell me her computer. Her response to me was, "Is your dog a registered service dog?" I said, "Registration is not required, so no." She said, "Then she's a pet."
Oh.
That was the patient advocate.
Wow.
I said, "Thank you very much." Got up, walked out, started walking down towards the mental health building, threw up again, went and saw my mental health provider, who was completely clueless that this was going to happen. And she was going to try to find out things for me about what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That was that day. That was the proximate cause for a 2-year battle with the forces of darkness at the VA. Yeah.
Meaning the VA.
Yes. but that was the day. That was when they violated it. And they violated my rights repeatedly after that. They retaliated against me repeatedly after that. I had no dental care for 2 years with a known chronic deteriorating dental condition. 2 years later, what happened was I lost all my teeth. I wasn't yet 50.
And this is just directly due to this seemingly out of the blue determination that your dog wasn't a service dog.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't get a call from the dental clinic saying the dentist had a problem with Rain. The dentist never said anything to me. Nobody said anything about the big red dog in the corner.
Uh-huh.
She didn't do anything. So when I went back 2 weeks later, I was completely blindsided.
You know, that seems to be a typical thing, though, is that, and you've said, we've talked about this before, if there's a policy, the VA won't tell you about it until they can hit you over the head with it.
Exactly.
And that's really frustrating, because there are policies. The VA policy for access to service dogs at that time in 2011, what was it called?
Just a second.
We're actually referencing documents, the actual legal documents.
This is
the, and stuff.
The Department of Veterans Affairs, VHA Directive 2011-013, dated March 10th, 2011. If I'm not mistaken, my initial incident with them was when they first denied me was April 24th, I believe. Let me see. No, April 12th. So it was literally...
What, about 3-4 weeks
after their directive. Yeah.
Now, let's back up a little bit and make sure that the audience understands a couple of things. First of all, the Department of Veterans Affairs does not fall under the Americans with Disabilities Act. It does fall under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. The Rehabilitation Act of 1973 does talk about service dogs. It does not fully identify and go into a lot of detail like the Americans with Disabilities Act of 2010 does. Yes. However, at this point in time, the Rehabilitation Act had been in effect for more than 30 years, and the Rehabilitation Act does allow access of service dogs on federal property. And the ADA had been in effect for a little over a year at this point, but there had been a lot of work and groundwork ahead of time before the signing of the ADA. This wasn't a law that just popped up and blam, here it is. This, I mean, all agencies involved, including the Department of Veterans Affairs, had to have had some say in how the ADA was written and put together. Even if it was for the Department of Veterans Affairs to read it and say, no, we don't want to be under its effect. Keep us under the Rehabilitation Act. Yep. I wish I had been a fly in the wall in the halls of Congress during that period of time. I think it would have been a very interesting. And maybe we can find somebody. Maybe that's something I'll do, is to see if I can find some of the originators of the Americans with Disabilities Act and see if they'd be willing to tell their story about how that law came about. I think it would be interesting, especially battles with the Department of Veterans Affairs, because you know there were some.
Mm-hmm.
So you filed a formal complaint over your treatment and your denial of access with your service dog.
Yes.
Who did you file it with? And tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the first thing I did was write down everything that happened that day. My memory being what it is because of the PTSD and also the drugs that I take, if it's not written down, it doesn't
prescription.
Exist.
Prescriptions.
Yes, prescription drugs, excuse me. Yeah, I don't use other drugs that I do not drink. So I wrote all that down. And then my roommate, after we tried to deal with the VA here, my roommate contacted then Congresswoman Bachman, who was running for president at the time, contacted her office. One of her staffers got back to me immediately, and her name was Karen. I won't give her last name. They gave me a privacy release form, and then I met with her and told her the story, showed her the documentation, and we began trying to get the VA to give it up, to abide by their own directive that wasn't a month old.
Right, right.
And they, over the course of time, the VA made several explanations for denying my dog. The first one, I don't remember if that was in writing or not, was that she was not well behaved. I asked the person telling me this when this misbehavior happened, what it was, who saw her, and what their background was in service dogs and animal behaviorism. Because there are certain things all service dog users know that our dogs will do if we're not paying attention to them.
You mean they're still dogs?
Yes. Well, and what they will do is called intelligent disobedience.
Right.
If I'm not paying attention to my dog leaning into my leg, bumping my hand with their head, or in the case of Brain, when I would start to dissociate, she literally would take my hand in her mouth and close her jaws gently over it, so the sensory stimulation would bring me back to myself. Mm-hmm. One thing that Rain did, and all of my service dogs since have done, is if all else fails, they do what I call paws up.
Uh-huh.
They stand up on their hind legs, and I use dogs. So that means the dog will place her paws on my chest and kind of shove me back a little, say, hey, idiot, pay attention. You're having a problem here.
Right. Skeeter does something similar. He's never put my hand in his mouth. Well, no, that's not true. He has mouthed me to get my attention. But my ultimate kind of eureka moment with Skeeter, when I realized I could trust his judgment when I wasn't, you know, when I was starting to get to that place.
Yep.
He actually turned around, reared up, put his paws on my shoulders, knocked me flat on my ass, and laid on me until I was calm enough to get out of the situation. So I know exactly. I know exactly what you mean.
And to outsiders, that can look like they're misbehaving. However, when I asked for the details of this misbehavior, they had nothing. They had no dates. They had no times. They had no witnesses. They had no nothing. The next thing they did the next excuse they gave me was that she was not a fully trained service dog, and that they did put in writing.
Who determines that?
That's an interesting theory. That's what Karen, Senator Bachman, Staffer, and I wanted to know. Who saw her? What is their background? What do they know about her training? What do they know about her mitigation of my disability? What do they know about service dogs at all? And again, they had nothing. They could not say, not one single person in the entire, well, even up to now, has ever asked me what my dog is trained to do for me. Not one person.
Which, in both the 2011 VA directive and the current VHA directive, they're supposed to ask. They're supposed to ask the two questions as defined by the ADA. In both those directives, they're told, you can ask, is this a service dog trained to assist with a disability? And what tasks is the dog trained to perform?
Nobody's ever asked. I have volunteered that information to people, employees, staff at the mental health center, when they ask me out of interest.
Right.
You know, what does your dog do for you? Or another veteran in the waiting room might ask, what does your dog do? How does it help?
Mm-hmm.
But not one single person from the VA and any VA that I've been to has ever asked me either of the two questions in all this time.
They've not even asked, is that a service dog trained to assist with a disability?
Nope.
Wow. So they determined in writing that it's not a fully trained service dog, yet nobody ever even asked you about the service dog.
Their final excuse, and the one that I could not fight, because they just refused to fight. In the interim of this two-year saga, I, under the direction of Congresswoman Bachman's staffer, filed a complaint, an official complaint, with the Department of Justice for being discriminated against based upon my disability.
Mm-hmm.
The DOJ went over everything. I supplied them with documentation up the wazoo. They went through everything. I presume they contacted the VA, and their determination was that I was indeed being discriminated against.
And I read that determination letter, and not only were you being discriminated against in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, but they determined that you were being discriminated against in violation of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. So literally, the VA had no foot to stand on in regards to their treatment of you, according to the Department of Justice.
Exactly. And what the final determination that the VA made was that the dental clinic is a protected or sterile environment. I showed them the CDC guidelines saying, no, it ain't. And it didn't matter. That was their rock, and they are standing on it.
And we're going to get into that CDC determination more specifically, because the reason we're doing this show is to give the history that you have battled with the VA. But we're going to talk about the current round two, if you will, discrimination battle with the VA. Before we do that, you are listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio WDVR. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back with you.
DV Radio. There's a smell in the air today. No,
It isn't those beans you had last night either. It's an explosion of napalm in the AM. And all natural soap only from KBarSoapCo.com. So start your day off as Lieutenant Colonel Kilgore does with the smell of napalm in the AM. Only from KBarSoapCo.com.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
That's KBarSoapCo.com.
I'm Dave Libby of WarriorService.org and SoserBand.com, and this is Contraband.
The Up in Arms Podcast.
This is Barracks Talk.
You're listening to
The Marquee.
Woo!
Dirty 30.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai.
Hear all of these veteran-made shows on DVRadio.net. From original to syndicated shows, they're all on the DV Radio Network. Don't forget to check out the schedule banner to find out when your favorite show is airing. Again, that's DVRadio.net. And don't forget to search DV Radio on the TuneIn app on your mobile device.
DV Radio.
You're listening to WDVR on DVRadio.net.
Welcome back to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, and you're listening to the Service Dog Show right here on DV Radio, WDVR. We were talking about sterility and sterilization guidelines, and that was the final excuse that the VA that you have been dealing with gave for refusing access with your service dog. They said that sterility was their concern. The authority for infection control in healthcare facilities is the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC. They are the establishing authority for all medical facilities in the United States of America. What the CDC says goes. So I want to refer now to the CDC's guidelines for infection control in healthcare facilities, which was originally published in 2003. Now, this is the latest update, which was February 15th of 2017. However, what I'm reading you the reference is consistent with the 2003 ruling. And this is a direct quote from the CDC. No evidence suggests that animals pose a more significant risk of transmitting infection than people. Therefore, service animals should not be excluded from such areas as treatment rooms, let me add that, unless an individual patient situation or a particular animal poses greater risk that cannot be mitigated through reasonable measures. Now, what the CDC has determined is that the only place that you can't take a service dog in a medical facility is isolation rooms or surgical theaters. These are sterile areas. This dental clinic does not have a isolated sterile area, does it?
No.
In fact, the patients go in with civilian clothes on, and the doctors, although they may be wearing lab coats or scrubs, they don't have to scrub in. They're not wearing any protective, things other than gloves or a mask. But if you have dander, stray pet hairs, pollen, any of these things on your clothing because you just came in off the street to get treatment, it counteracts sterility.
Yep. And in my particular case, allowing me to walk through the dental clinic was almost a guarantee of contamination.
Right.
At the time, we had four cats, three snakes, a dog, and a tortoise. I had stuff on me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. just walking through the with none of the rooms having doors or being isolated, it exposes to dander. It just comes off your clothes. I mean, that's anywhere. That's in a grocery store. It's not just medical facilities. If you're in civilian clothes, you're shedding your skin, your hair, any pets you have hair, dander, any pollen you've walked through, basically anything you've been exposed to in the environment is on your clothing and falls off of your clothing.
Yep. There is more chance of contamination from a human being walking through than there is from a dog laying in a corner.
Absolutely agree. So that was their final argument, and that was their bottom line. And just to resolve the story about the whole dental issue, ultimately, after 2 years, they sent you to a civilian provider who didn't have a problem with your service dog.
Oh, he adored her. He adored her. He encouraged her to break her downstairs and come over to see him in the treatment room.
In other words, the VA's excuse and reasoning was absolute bullshit.
Yep.
Which brings us to round two, which is where I come in. Again, I want to thank you for reaching out. I have gone out of my way to make sure that I am knowledgeable about both the ADA and the VA's policies regarding service dogs. For the reason of assisting veterans. And so you contacted me last week, irate, understandably. Tell me about why.
I, about four months ago, bunged up my shoulder, apparently in my sleep.
Sucks, doesn't it?
Oh, God, it sucks so bad. And what I ended up doing, I mean, I did the thing. I took the Motrin, I drank the water, I changed the socks. It still didn't do anything. Went to the VA, saw my provider, who also loves my dog, my current dog, Danny. He set me up with physical therapy, who also loved her. And I cannot say enough good about the physical therapy at this VA facility. They were head and shoulders above any medical treatment I've ever gotten from the VA. They were fabulous. They were attentive. They understood why I had a dog with me. They understood my reaction to physical contact. They understood treating chronic pain. All the way along, they did great. However, you are only, who made the determination, I don't know. But at this VA facility, you're allowed 12 sessions at a specialty clinic. I was making progress, my shoulder was getting better, but at the end of 12 sessions, they had to stop no matter what.
Okay.
So they sent me off to get a consult with the ortho people. I made an appointment, and I kept my appointment. Danny and I go in. We check in on the little healthy vet computer terminal that they have now, because it's apparently too much trouble for a receptionist to deal with a veteran. But that's another subject.
Let me interject here for a second. I love these little computer terminals where you go check in. My clinic, I go check in on the computer terminal, and I still have to check in with the receptionist. So why are the computer terminals there? That's just a thought to throw out there.
Well, in my case, you don't have to deal with the receptionist. I'm not entirely certain what the receptionist is for at that point.
Just to sign your travel claim.
Yeah, okay.
Apparently, and gossip.
No, they send your happy ass off to the travel office to do that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But
so
I go to see the.
Well, the point there is no standardization.
No, heavens no.
In your VA, you don't deal with the receptionist at all. In my VA, even though I use the little check-in kiosk, I still have to check in with the receptionist.
Well, I should clarify. At the ortho clinic, I don't deal with the receptionist.
Okay.
At other clinics, I deal with receptionist and not the kiosk. At other clinics, I deal with the kiosk and the receptionist. Or ortho is the only one where I haven't had to talk to a living human being.
Okay. So no standardization even in the same facility.
Oh, heavens no.
This is a problem, folks. And and we'll tie this in. This is a small example. We're going to tie this in here as the story progresses. So you checked in and you're sitting and waiting.
Yep, sitting there with Danny. She's doing her impression of a service rug. And I was sitting there staring blankly, basically. And there were a couple other people in there. They were smiling at Danny. They asked a couple of questions about her. No biggie. Out comes a young woman dressed in scrub, calls my name. I stood up. Danny stood up. And we started to walk towards her, and she kind of backed away a little bit and said, no, your dog can't come in here. And I stopped, and I said, why can't my dog come in there? Typical bureaucratic fashion. Well, that's just our policy. I said, why do you have the policy? That's just our policy. That this young woman, when you pushed the button, that was the response you got. Didn't matter what button you pushed. I said, well, then I cannot come in there. And I turned around and I walked out. I know myself. I do not deal with things well until I've had a few moments to process it. Then went out, got in the car, drove home. Spoke to the roommate, ranted, raved, all of those things. We decided to go back to the patient advocate, and it was at lunchtime, so we waited until we were sure someone was there. I spent about 40 minutes cuddled up on the bed with Danny, trying to not have flashbacks to a dental clinic.
Right. You've already been through this.
Yeah. I knew what road I was about to travel down, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to go down the rabbit hole again. And it was stressful. It was really pretty unpleasant. I took an extra bump of one of my psych meds that I have for such an occasion. My roommate and I trotted off to see the patient advocate, who, lo and behold, is a young woman named Charity, who was brand new as a patient advocate and handled my part of my interaction with the dental clinic debacle. And she, at that time, she didn't know a lot, but she was able to speak very well and say nothing at all.
Oh, bureaucrat ease.
Oh, yes. We chatted with her, and initially, it came off fairly well with me. We're in the process of dealing with this kind of problem because ortho determines that their treatment rooms, procedure rooms, whatever you want to call them, are sterile. They are protected. I said, but they're not. I go in street clothes. And she said, yes, I know. And that's one of my issues with them. She also said, we have, I don't know, call them team meetings every morning, whatever. Each department does. She was going to go to orthos and tell them that they're still screwing up, that they have to accommodate me. The upshot of talking to Charity was, yeah, we're working on it. I will get back to you, which is pretty much what I got. Tried to deal with a dental clinic.
Right. And that's one of the things that's frustrating for any of us dealing with the VA is when you go talk to the patient advocate, they're just a mouthpiece. They can't make any decisions.
They are like the DOJ.
Yeah. This is a face that you talk to, and you talk to this face and this face turns around and goes and reports to whoever they report to, but they're not, you know, whether they're on your side or not, they can't make any decision.
And they're never on your side. Let's face it. They are the flack for the VA.
Right, right.
They are to divert attention and take the heat. And her solution for me in the interim was to call, this occurred on a Thursday, was to call her Friday or Monday, and she would reschedule the appointment for me and tell them they had to have a separate room for me. Well, I learned in high school, and again, when I went to see the civilian dentist, that Thurgood Marshall then said, unproved that separate ain't equal.
Yeah.
They're separating us based upon our disability.
Which
that is discrimination.
Discrimination. Absolutely agree.
And over the course of the weekend, I sort of got into a tizzy. The more I thought about making another appointment, it made me physically ill. To have to go through this all again, I couldn't do it. So I didn't call her on Monday. I didn't call her on Tuesday. On Wednesday, I made a Facebook post that you responded to and talked me down a little bit. Because I really was starting to spiral. And I could only do so much because, like PTSD, my response was reasonable.
Yeah.
Based on my past experience.
Right. We avoid the things that trigger us.
Yes.
There's no better way to say it, you know? And this is, I don't like the word triggered. I don't use it. I talk about stressors. Yep. But this is stress to the point of trigger. Yep. And we all know what happens when a trigger gets pulled. Something downrange is destroyed. So we don't want to get there. And I perfectly understand. But, you know, the other hand of that, the other side of that is that there always has to be somebody who goes first.
Yeah.
And you've already been over the you know, the lip of the trench and into no man's land. And although the Department of Justice ruled that you were right, nothing happened.
Yep.
So
but I will fight this battle again.
Well, and you know, I hate, you know, I'm basically using you as a Marine and, you know, putting you first. But you know, that's the problem is if somebody doesn't stand up, who's going to stand up? And there's, because I'm not the patient who's being discriminated against, although I can advocate from afar as much as I can, you know, when we're talking to veterans who are dealing with these kinds of issues with the VA, ultimately your name has to be the one at the bottom of the complaint.
Yep.
And that's just because it's you that it's affecting. Now, that being said, policies can be changed because of those veterans who go toe-to-toe with the system. But that doesn't make the situation better for the veteran right now.
And the VA here did change their policies based on their first dance with me. They now have a brochure. They have a pamphlet about service dogs. It's complete and utter idiocy.
Again, with the bureaucracy and the bureaucraties.
Yep. And it says nothing and says it very well. I can't say it any other way.
Yeah.
Let me pull that up. They talk about a service dog. They talk about overnight care, which is something they hadn't done before. Yeah. Only fully trained service dogs are permitted on federal property. They don't say who determines what fully trained is.
Well, the law does.
Yeah.
The handler who determines that.
But the VA doesn't say that. Service dog is allowed in all common areas of the VA with the exception of areas where staff wear protective clothing, such as surgical areas and the dental procedures area.
So they're still covering their butts as far as dental's concerned.
Yep. Goes on to say, the fitness and gym areas where they could be injured by equipment, which I can almost understand, except none of us are going to let our dogs be injured.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'm not going to have my dog bench pressing 240.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have issues. I did a stress test at the physical therapy, and they wanted me to do it on the elliptical. Skeeter freaked out, would not let me near the elliptical. He was not having it. So I said, you know what? Let's try this treadmill. He laid right down, calm, no problem. I don't know if he thought the machine was just, you know, because he's so involved in all those swinging things that it was attacking me, but he just would not let me do the elliptical.
Yep.
I went over to the treadmill, not a problem. He just didn't downstay, didn't move, let me do my 10 minutes on the treadmill, and he was fine with that.
Yep.
And that's probably more my fault than it's my fault. I never exposed him to an elliptical because I never had any reason to, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, that's a training issue that I can overcome. How do I overcome it? By exposing him to an elliptical.
Yep.
Which means taking him to a gym.
And see, that is the sum total of the access, this brochure that this VA put together. This is not a VA brochure. It is this particular VA's brochure.
Which goes back to the difference between the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 and the ADA. The VA's policy, which we will discuss in a minute. The VHA policy is written, and it does say that the VA will adhere to the appropriate federal law, which is the ADA.
Exactly.
But because the VA does not fall under the ADA, the appropriate federal law may also be the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. And the individual VAs still have the power to decide which law they're going to use.
Yep.
And that is where discrimination occurs.
One thing I found very interesting about where they said dogs could not go, it didn't mention ortho as being protected.
Just dental.
Yep. Dental and surgical and the gym. Doesn't say squat about an ortho exam room.
Yeah. Now, so you contacted me. I drew together the current VHA directive, which is VHA Directive 1188. This directive was signed into policy August 26th of 2015. So at this point, they have had 4 years. Three and a half years to understand and enact this policy. And this policy says specifically, and I'm reading from the VHA directive, not from the ADA, when it is not obvious that a dog is a service animal, VHA staff may only ask the individual with a dog the following two questions to determine if it is a service animal. Is your dog a service animal required because of a disability? What work or tasks has the dog been trained to perform? Direct quote from the ADA. And then it goes on to say, areas of VHA property where a service animal may not access. A service animal is not permitted to access certain areas of VHA property to ensure that patient care, patient safety, and infection prevention and control standards are met. Areas on VHA property that a service animal may not access include, but are not limited to, here they live, they give themselves that little, we can determine it if it suits our needs. Operating room and surgical suites, no brainer. Areas where invasive procedures, and here's where I think we've got them this time. Areas where invasive procedures are being performed. Not may be performed, but are being performed. And when it comes down to bureaucrats and bureaucraties, that one little word is all the world of difference in establishing whether or not their policy is within the following of the VHA directive. If there are not open sterile trays because somebody's being cut on in the room, the invasive procedure is not being performed, the service dog may be permitted in that area.
Mm-hmm.
That is using their own policy and their own argument against it. Of course, their claim and their argument is, again, sterility. And we've already read the CDC's ruling on it, which is that the presence of a service animal does not increase the risk of infection.
And understand, the procedure they would be performing on me is a series of injections into my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't squat that's invasive. If my dog managed to contaminate the needle they were about to stick in me, it's they put it down there for her to contaminate it.
Oh,
it's
not physically possible. Rub it on the dog.
Yeah. It's not physically possible for my dog to contaminate a needle.
Yeah. So I wrote an inquiry via the Veterans Affairs Department communication system to that VA. I believe I sent it to the region. The region, of course, forwarded it to that VA to charity.
Yep.
And I got a response. And what I did was I wrote about my concerns. I said, you know, it's come to my attention that service dog handlers are being denied access to the orthopedic clinic at your facility. According to VHA Directive 1188, and I quoted what we just read, you know, that they're the only places that they're not allowed are sterile, you know, surgical suites or places where invasive procedures are being performed. And I said, an additional argument might be that sterility is a concern. And I quoted the CDC, which is, as far as any medical facility in the United States is concerned, the word of God. And God says, the presence of a service animal in a non-sterile environment does not increase any risk of infection. So her response is, we want to ensure we meet all the needs of all veterans seeking care and in the surgical specialty care areas of the facility. Our particular configuration is such that all exam or consultation rooms in SSC, their little acronym, are also used as procedure rooms where sterile trays are opened and used on patients. So if they're not being used on the patients, they are closed to maintain sterility. Because of this, we are currently seeking alternative ways in which to serve our veterans who rely on the work of a fully trained service dog. As you have pointed out, and this is what really chapped my hide, as you have pointed out, some regulatory guidance suggests the privacy of an exam room may be sufficient to limit the impact on the care of other veterans, and I'm working with the appropriate subject matter experts to evaluate the practices here. Now, this is, again, the bureaucraties is just, it is
mind-numbingly
stupid.
Charity is good at the double talk.
He does the double talk well, and this is a practiced hand at bureaucraties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so again, back to what the VHA directive says, are being performed. Areas where invasive procedures are being performed. If I go in or you go in to a individual exam room with a closed door, which that particular part of the facility has, and there is not an invasive procedure ongoing in that room because you're the patient and it would be on you, then an invasive procedure is not being performed. And since it is not being performed, the service dog can be there by their own policy, by the Department of Veteran Affairs policy. However, and again, sterility is their argument, the CDC has already said it doesn't cause an increased risk of infection. The whole reason their little sterile procedure trays are covered, closed, wrapped up, and I'm sure we've all seen these. They're wrapped in this fancy, you know, white or light blue sterile heavy cloth-like paper, and there's tape on it, and they have to open it up and unwrap it to expose it, at which point it is no longer considered sterile because it's exposed to the air, in order to take out the instruments to use them on the patient. If you're in there in civilian clothes, street clothes, the dog has no greater effect on sterility than your street clothes do. And yep. And in fact, since the doctor and the nurses aren't scrubbing in and coming in, you know, fully top to bottom in the little paper cover up stuff and all of that, they're not scrubbing in to do the procedure. They wash their hands. They're wearing a lab coat. They put the rubber gloves on and they do the procedure, right? Yep. But it's not sterile. It is not a sterile environment. So this VA's argument saying we have to maintain sterility with these trays, they actually contradicted themselves in their own argument. Until the tray is opened, it's sterile. That's the whole point.
Well, and the other thing, too, that people have to remember is that even when they're wearing gloves, once they touch my body, those gloves aren't sterile anymore. They have been contaminated.
Well, and not only that, but since you're the dog handler, your skin has the dog's fur, you know, stray yep. hairs, dander, anything that I don't know about you, but I'm in constant physical contact with my dog.
Oh, yeah.
He's always up against me, always rubbing against me, whatever, you know. So anything that's on his skin is going to be on my skin. He does not have fleas, but if he did, I'd have them too. Because we're always in, you know, he sleeps on the same bed, wakes me up from nightmares. It's part of his job, you know? So this is so utterly nonsensical. And anybody, if laymen can read what the VA's policy is, read and understand what the CDC's guidelines are, and look at their excuse and go, well, that's just stupid. You'd think the medical professionals would understand their own policies and their own guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, what they do, they get you down that rabbit hole. My first go around, you talk to the patient advocate, Charity. Go over here and talk to Janet. Janet sends me to Mindy. Mindy sends me to Nigel. Nigel sends me back to Charity. And around we go again and again.
And that's, you know, and that might be a little bit of ammo that you can use in the current battle is, look, I've done this before. You sent me here to here to here to here to here to here and back to where I started. So just keep me here. Okay, yeah. I want one face. I want one person to deal with because I have been through this before. Look in your records and you'll see that. You were there, you know?
Yep.
But it's you know, the bottom line is we're dealing with a bureaucracy whose sole purpose is to perpetuate itself. Mm-hmm. The VA no longer exists to take care of veterans. That's not what they do.
No.
The VA is a bureaucracy that exists to perpetuate the bureaucracy, to maintain its budget and, you know, give bonuses to their, you know, senior officials.
Yep. To give you, in a nutshell, how the VA feels about this, the final nail in my coffin with the VA, my final denial from the VA, that said, in exactly so many words, there is no more appeal to this decision, was sent to me certified mail, postage due. I paid for them to deny me.
And people wonder why veterans are so frustrated with the VA. This is the way that veterans all throughout the system across the country are being treated by the bureaucracy, folks. This is what we're dealing with. Not only, although we've been told by the Department of Justice that we are violating your rights, not only are we going to continue violating your rights, but we're going
to
charge you when we
do it.
So we're going to charge you to do it. This is what we're dealing with.
Yeah. I have never paid for sex in my life, but I paid to get fucked.
Oh, and they didn't even offer you a reach around or use any lube.
Oh, hell no. I didn't even get kissed.
This is a battle, folks, that there are people out there fighting, and DV Vet Chick is one of them, and thank you so much. I know it's not fun to go through this over and over again.
No, it's not. Just pulling together the archive to send to you. It's depressing reading.
Yeah, yeah.
And it put me back where I was sick and confused and angry and victimized by the people who are supposed to help me.
Well, but you know, you made the choice to stand up and refuse to be a victim. And,
damn Skippy.
And that's the thing is, look, the VA is not going to treat us fairly. They do not treat us fairly. We can choose to let that beat us down, or we can stand up and fight it. We do have rights. And that's one thing, you know, if anything, listen, folks, you need to understand this. The Department of Veterans Affairs official position on PTSD service dogs is that there is no empirical evidence that shows that they are effective in treatment of PTSD. Well, that first of all, has been already disproven by the study at Purdue University that just was completed, and they published their findings. And I will be doing a show on that here soon, that showed that, yes, PTSD service dogs do indeed improve the quality of life and improve the mental health of their users. There's another study going on. That's the show you listened to, the last show, with a group down in Florida in a university that is showing that cooperative training of PTSD service dogs, where the veteran is involved in every step of training and keeps the dog 24/7 and is responsible for bringing it to classes, is effective as well. Okay, so we are getting the empirical evidence disproving the VA's official position. But not only that, but there are, I mean, you talked about it. You were working with the psychiatric service dog partners. Is that what it was called?
Society,
which no longer exists, unfortunately.
No.
But they were doing that kind of work, and they were showing it.
They had gotten a grant to do a 5-year longitudinal study.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, one of the primaries in that, and the woman who created PSDS, had a severe mental health reaction and simply had to stop.
Right. And that's, you know, and that's one of the things that I think that an important thing to understand, and one side of the argument is understands it, but the other seems to want to turn a blind eye to it, is, look, these are people with mental health issues. These are people who are disabled because of their mental health issues. And they're merely standing up for their rights. Service dog handlers, and I've said this on this show before, and I will continue to say this, service dog handlers aren't asking for special treatment. We just want equal treatment.
Yep.
And separate is not equal.
No.
And
I will not let them farm me out to a civilian doctor again.
Well, no, it's the VA's responsibility.
Yep.
That's that, you know, you're a service-connected, disabled veteran. And at, what is it, after 20% or 30% disability, the health care of that veteran becomes the responsibility of the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yep.
And
in my case, I am 70% disabled, 100% unemployable.
Mm-hmm.
And they still act as if I am asking for treatment to come out of the individual physician's pocket. They act like they are paying for it when they deny something.
And, you know, they aren't.
No.
The United States paid for it. The people of the United States paid for it in their taxes. It was set aside and budgeted for the Department of Veterans Affairs in the annual budget. The money exists there to take care of veterans. The VA, it doesn't cost any individual doctor at the VA a penny to do their job. That's what they're paid for.
Yep.
This is, and I mean, folks, this is systemic. This is an issue across the entire Department of Veterans Affairs. It's an issue that involves service dog handlers, but it's an issue that involves all other veterans, because other veterans are running into the same kind of bureaucratic nightmares for their issues, whether or not they have a service dog. This is not isolated to just service dog handlers.
Oh, no.
It's a specific problem for service dog handlers. But we come across these stories day in and day out of veterans being denied care, veterans being turned away, veterans being told no because a bean counter, a bureaucrat, has made a policy that determines that we can or cannot do this, this, and this.
I'm currently fighting a parallel battle that has nothing to do with my service dog to get my cataract surgery. The VA, I was told by my physician, my eye doctor, I had sufficiently annoyed him that there is no medical reason for them to deny my cataract surgery other than they have set the standard that until my vision is 20/40 or worse, I can't have the surgery. I'm at 20/30 right now. I can no longer drive at night. I can no longer do my artwork or my photography. I haven't done that in 3 years. I have not read a book in over a year. If I'm starting to have difficulty using my computer screen, once that happens, if I lose that, I have nothing.
And
that doesn't have to do with my service dog.
Nope, it doesn't. That just has to do with the bureaucrats making medical decisions for bureaucratic reasons. That's the way we're being treated. There are administrators who make decisions that affect the medical treatment of veterans. Not doctors, administrators make these decisions, and it affects the medical and mental health of the veterans. And I'm going to say something very crass, and I'm not saying it in an unfeeling way, but you want to know why veterans are killing themselves in the parking lot of the VA? It's because of bureaucratic bullshit like this. It's because they get fed up. They're done. They're tired of fighting for simply wanting to be treated.
Yep.
You want to attack veteran suicide? You want to lower it? Start treating your patients. Not following procedure from a bureaucrat.
We lost one last summer, last spring, actually.
I mean, just start following. Every single doctor in that facility took the Hippocratic Oath. And,
took the Hippocratic Oath.
Yeah, but they also took the Hippocratic Oath. Well, there's no medical reason why I can't do this surgery, but the policy is, wait a minute, you're the doctor. Is it medically necessary? Yes. Then why does this policy exist? Bottom line, this is how we're being treated, folks. This is what they're doing to veterans. We need to change this. We need to change this on every level. It's not just an issue about service dogs. It's an issue about treatment. If you were going to a civilian eye doctor, you'd have already had the surgery. Over and done with. Probably a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that in a non-one-payer system is a no-brainer. And that's another argument that veterans had when they were starting to pass the Obamacare. Single-payer is the way to go. No, we live under that system. This is what they're doing to us. This is how they're screwing us. It doesn't work.
Nope.
This is blatant.
They're killing us.
Absolutely. Delay, deny until we die. Because you know what? Dead veterans don't need benefits.
Nope.
Bottom line.
It is cheaper. Bureaucrats
don't have to worry about us if we're not there.
Yep. It's cheaper. I'm sure that they had determined after that gentleman in Arizona a few months back got the verdict from when he sued the VA down there. I am sure that they have decided it is cheaper to pay the occasional lawsuit than it is to treat their patients.
And that's sad. Yep. That's sad, and it's wrong. How do we fix it? How do we change it? I don't have an answer. I mean, I can look at the case with the service dogs. It's real simple. Follow your own policy and adhere to the CDC's rulings. It really is that simple. Your own policy says unless the invasive procedures are actively being performed in the area, the service dog is allowed. That's a key word in your own directive. Are being performed. Invasive procedures are being performed. You're not walking through a surgical suite while somebody's guts open, you know? You're going into a private exam room to have an injection.
Yeah.
And I don't know about your clinic, but I could take Skeeter in with me to the phlebotomist to get blood drawn.
Oh, the bloodsuckers in the lab at Dill or Danny.
There you go. I mean, it's just, that's an invasive procedure.
Yeah, you
think. With sterile instruments. Mm-hmm. But the service dog is allowed there. Because you know why? The only way to get anything onto the needle is if they rub the damn needle on the dog. This is common sense, people. The VA is refusing to use common sense because they are bureaucrats. Because it is a bureaucracy. I don't know the answer. I don't have a solution. I know that we can try to attack it one piece at a time. And slowly, one battle at a time, maybe the tides will turn and we can begin to change the system. But the only way to do it is to be educated, be smart about it, understand their policies, understand the law, and use their own words against them.
That's what I'm going to try to do.
We will keep you up to date on DV Vet Chick's case, I guess you can call it, as she deals with this particular VA and their discriminatory policies. Folks, this is not a happy-go-lucky show. There's not a lot of great, sweet, you know, wonderful, smiley moments. This is stark, utter reality of what service dog handlers deal with, what veterans deal with when dealing with the Department of Veterans Affairs day in and day out. This is not an isolated story. This is a common story. I hope you understand that this is something that happens regularly. DV Vet Chick, thank you very much for joining me for the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog.
Thank you.
And until next show, thank you for listening. You are listening to DV Radio, WDVR. We'll talk to you next time.